All right, Don. Let it rip.
I'm Don, an alcoholic. Amen. And a member of this group. And I've said this to others over a period of time. I look out and I see this room is full. And I can close my eyes and I can see six of us up in the room up at the community college in the teacher's room. And that's where we started up there. Myself, going back a little bit in history, when I got sober in 1977, no one talked about drugs at an AA meeting. If you started to say you were smoking weed or doing drugs and drinking, someone would tell you, there's a place for you and it's not here. It's down the hall. They've got another meeting, meaning a NA or something like that. They were pretty adamant about not talking about drugs in the meeting. So, and also, I never heard, and I was talking with my friend Chris, who's the one who we put this thing together. They never talked about the big book. You would hear people say, it was almost like it was code. They'd say things, oh, if you want to hide something on an alcoholic, put him, you know, put it in the big book. They'll never look there, that kind of thing. And if your big book is coming apart, your life won't be. Those were the things. But no one ever shared how they had actually gone through the steps using the big book. Now, again, this is 49 years ago, and it went on. I'm sure there were people who had gone through the steps and were sharing it with people. And I think it was Kitchen AA or... but no one was sharing from a podium, like go to a speaker meeting and it's their turn to speak. No one would share that they had gone through the steps out of the book. That just, no, I never heard it. And I was doing 10, 11 meetings a week. I could do it. I was in a position where I could hit those many meetings. And I was 2 years, 2.5 years sober. And on the outside, everything was going really well for me. I would gone to school. I was going to school on the GI Bill up here at the college. The girlfriend and I had been together for a couple of years. She was thinking about getting married. She wanted to get married. And everything on the outside was really no complaints. But I was feeling that blah, that empty feeling. Oh, God, is this all there is? And I tried a couple of AWOLs. I completed two of them. Now, I want to stop right here and just make it abundantly clear. I have nothing, absolutely nothing against the AWOL program. What I want to make clear is it was just not a good fit for me. I think for me, the fellowship was really appealing to me, and I've made some friends that I still talk with today that I met in the AWOL group. But it wasn't what I was looking for. So I tried two, and a third one started up. Now, in this third one, there was five people in the group that I was in, and they were talking about taking the third step, different ways of how they were going to do it and all. And someone said, well, let's do the third step way it's written in the big book. Now, bear in mind, I'm sober over 2 years, doing 10, 11 meetings a week. And I had gone back then, the big book meetings, and I'm sure they're around today, were where you would read a paragraph, and then if you wanted to share on it, you could. If not, that, you know, you'd just pass along, someone else could, that type of thing. And I had been, over that 2.5 years, God only knows how many big book meetings where I read that I would go to. And I never dawned on me that the steps were in the big book. Even though I had read it, no one ever talked about it. It was whatever it was. They just moved right along. And I just moved right along with them as well. And then on this third AWOL that I was in, and they were talking about, they said, all right, we'll do the third step out of the big book next week. So I found myself on that Saturday before. The meeting used to have meet on Sunday night. And I found myself over at some friends, Bob and Janie King. They're both died sober today, and they were really instrumental in my sobriety. But I was over talking with them, sitting at their table, and I was saying, I don't know what they're talking. I can't see any third step here in this big book. And Janie King was a no-nonsense woman. She come over and she was doing her dishes. I can see it now. And she takes the rag and she throws the towel down that she was drying the dishes with. And she takes a book out of my hand, Dawn. And then she opens it up, whatever, and said, here, Dawn, right here. And there it was, like the letters were that big, jumping off the page, the whole third step prayer. And so the next day, that Sunday at the meeting, we took the third step out of the big book. And you had 2 weeks to write your fourth step. And I had written two other fourth steps in the AWOL, one using, I think, the Hazleton method and another way. Anyways, the long and the short of it, I did one on both of them like on a weekend and one on a Saturday afternoon and the other one did. That's. And so as a result, I didn't get the effect that other people were getting from it. But we take the third step here. But in the process of looking at the third step out of the big book, I like to read, so I just kept reading. And I read the fourth step and what they were talking about and the format, how they had things laid out, really all cut and dried. All I have to do was follow the directions. And so they gave us 2 weeks to write our fourth step. And after the first week, when I went back to the AWOL, I'm probably working it. I was pretty, I knew this was like the last stop for me. If this didn't work, because I'd tried, like I say, the AWOLs and 12 and 12 meetings and stuff. And I knew I just didn't want to keep going the way I was going. Like I said, there was something missing in my life. And I had everything on the outside. I had the girlfriend, I had money, I had doing well in school, and a car that started when I turned the key, you know? Thank God for old Volkswagen. It didn't take much to get them going. But so anyways, the long and the short of it, I knew I was not going to be able to finish that fourth step in 2 weeks. I was working full time, and what I did, I set up a, again, where I made attempts with the other two four steps. I did not want to repeat that. And my alcoholism was alive and well, did not want me to write this fourth step. So I had to set up a schedule where I would work on it a minimum of 2 hours and a maximum of four. And the thing is, with 2 hours, I get going. And those of us who have written their fourth know that once you start writing, things start to flow once you open it. And if I, so by 2 hours, I would get something done. And 4 hours, I would write on it. But then anything more than 4 hours, I wouldn't touch it for a week, one of those situations. So I had learned from prior experience. So in, it was, I used to pray. I would get down on my, used to pray, still pray. Oh, I pray before I come up here for crying out loud. But I would ask God to guide me when I wrote the fourth and have me write it the way he wanted me to write it, the way, and my thinking was, if he could keep me sober then like 2.5 years and drug free, I was basically smoking weed, doing a lot of psychedelics. That was my thing, and that he could have me write this four-step the way he wanted. So I started writing it, and again, I would say that prayer before I started, and I would work on it like a 50-minute hour, get up. I had a little cat. I'd take care of the cat, that type of thing, and then I'd get back down on it. And things started to happen for me. Things started to come together. Now, bear in mind, when I wrote my four step, there was nobody that I knew, and I'm going to a lot of meetings, and I had a lot of friends in AA, from guys who were sober 20 years to some who came in 2 weeks before me, that type of thing. But none of them that I knew of had done the steps out of the book. So that translated in my case, there was no one I could reach out to if I had a question on how do I do this, or am I doing this the right way? There was no one, like I say, those people that had doing it weren't sharing it from the podium or elsewhere, out in the parking lot having a cigarette. No one shared that, to my knowledge, to me. So I did what I found works really well for me, is I prayed. I asked God, again, not only when I was writing it, to write this four-step the way you want it written, but if I wasn't sure about something, I would stop and I would pray and I would ask for some guidance and direction. Again, there was no one for me to bounce things off of. My sponsor, thank God, gave me the information that I feel is the most important message I can carry, and he shared it with me. And that was how to stay away from one drink, one drug for one day. But he never shared anything with me about the steps. And so again, I was on my own. But I wasn't alone because God was with me. He was guiding me. So I finish up my fourth, and it come time to take the fifth step. And there was no one that I could take the fifth step with. Now, there were people around I could ask. I could have asked my sponsor. There are other men that I knew around that I could have asked, but I didn't feel comfortable with them. I didn't want to ask my sponsor. In many ways, he was a father figure to me. And I didn't want to share my sexual escapades with this fellow who I looked on as you know, a father figure in many ways. So I did what they said in the book. I prayed till someone came along. And I would say within a couple of weeks, I was at a pickup meeting. It was a Sunday morning down here at the hospital. They used to have one at there. And one of the fellas who spoke was up from Falmouth. I'd heard him speak before. There were a lot of things about his life that he had lived that appealed to me. I had been in the parachute infantry in Vietnam. He had been in the Marine infantry in Korea. So we had some things we could relate to. He had been a Catholic priest, and then he left the church, got married, and had two children. And he was sober about 8 or 9 years. Anyways, I liked him. I felt comfortable with him. And it was, I asked him to be my sponsor, I asked him to hear my fifth, and he said, sure. So I would go down to see him. He had his own business, and it was down in Falmouth. We would go from 7 to 10, and I would drive from Yarmouth to Dennis and go down there to see him. Well, I was probably working on my my eighth and ninth step, and I tell you, it's a funny story. Again, there was no one to guide me along, okay? And one of the things I guide my friends today, who I sponsor, is give the girlfriends a break. Don't go rushing to make amends. Well, I'll tell you, this woman that I'd gotten sober with, we were together for 3 years. She kept me out of a lot of AA romances, that type of thing. And I owed her some amends. In fact, she was the woman that got me into the steps, into the steps out of the Big Book, because I reached a low. That's why I tell my friend Chris that people say, oh, you were so-and-so, oh, you started the Big Book step group. And I say, no, it was two women that started the Big Book group. My Susan and Chris's Kerry got us right, got us foolish. But when it comes time to make the amend up there, I go up there to see her, and she had gone on, got the car, had a nice job in Boston. They gave her a car, da-da-da-da. She was living over in Brookline, and I met her where she was living, and I'm, you know, ulterior motives. I'm looking at, well, if I get the overnight tonight, I can park over there, that type of thing. And so we go out to eat, and then this is like, it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon when we're walking back to the car. And she says, she stops and she looks at her watch and she says, you know, if you leave now, you can beat that Boston traffic. So God did for me what I could not do for myself. So I go through the steps, making amends and all, and I belong to the Osterville Young People's Group. Now, at the time, I was encouraged to go up there, excuse me, because there were people there that were talking. It was explained to me, there were people there that were going there that not only had done other drugs than alcohol, they were also talking about it. And so we went up there, and it was on a Friday night, and I'm up there, and this fella come up, Bill S., and he asked me to sponsor him. And now, I'm sober 2.5 years, and going to a lot of meetings. One person asked me to sponsor him during that 2.5 years, and I never saw him again. He went on his own. So here I am. I'm gone through the steps probably a month or so, and Bill asked me to sponsor him. So, and he was new, so I said, yeah, I'd do 90 meetings in 90 days, and we'll talk about it, because he wanted to get right into the steps. And so after his 90 days, he'd come back, and we're ready to go. And he wanted to get into the steps, right? He was hot to trot. And I said, well, you can get a 12 and 12 book and join a 12 and 12 step meeting. You can wait for another AWOL to start up, because they would be starting up periodically. And I had been reading this book, Dr. Bob and the Old Timers, and they were sharing how when new people would come in, you'd take them and you'd just march them right along through the steps. And I said, well, we can go through the steps using the Big Book. And he said, yeah, I'd like to do that. So we did. And he went on to sponsor someone. And then Chris, the second fellow who I sponsored, he approached me. He'd been on the marijuana maintenance program for a while, so I could understand that. But he was sober and ready to go. And he was the second fellow who I sponsored through the steps. So I'm over visiting Chris. He had, in fact, this is funny. He used to have a little apartment right over, I forget, is it Cape Cod Ice Cream over there? And
Four Seas Ice Cream.
He had a little apartment right in the middle. He had Four Seas Ice Cream here. Then right next, right attached to it, was his little apartment. And then there was a liquor store. So, I mean, he had a choice. So by this time, I'd gone over to see him. I think we're going to go ride motorcycles. I'm not sure. But I went over to visit him. And I go walking in, and he says, "Well, I've already made arrangements. I have a room up at the college," because he was going up to Four Seas, and made acquaintance with one of the professors up there who happened to be sober in the program, and he and Chris got along, and Chris asked him for a room, told him he wanted to start a meeting, and so. Last name was Doherty. I don't know his first name. He's since moved on, made the program. He was out of Charlestown. And so he got us Chris a little teacher's room. And it was six of us were cramped in there. But Chris said, "Yeah, I want to start a meeting. I want to make it a men's discussion meeting. Because I don't want Kerry," that was his girlfriend, "I don't want Kerry and her girlfriends coming down and taking over the meeting." That's what started the men's big book group. Kerry and Susan. And he said that, "Well, yeah, I don't want them taking over the meeting. I'll make it a men's discussion meeting." And it just came out of me. It was truly divine intervention, because I said, "Well, why don't we make it a step meeting and we'll use the big book as the guidelines for it?" And again, I had been reading Dr. Bob in the old timers, and this is what, you know, something they'd done. And I don't know if they actually started a meeting they would do individually. But he thought that was a great idea. And one of the reasons why we wanted to start this Big Book Step meeting was we had been going to regular 12 and 12 meetings, and you'd probably see 10, 12 people there, maybe more. And if I know I speak for myself, I'd gone into a 12 and 12 meeting because I wanted to learn. This is when I was looking for someone to throw me a lifesaver there, that everything was good on the outside, but inside I was just blah. And so I would go to a 12 and 12, and if there was 10, 15 people there, you might hear 2, 3, 4 different ways of doing, say, the third step. And I have to laugh because this stuck with me, 48 years later. One guy said that his sponsor recommended that he do one step a year. I knew it wasn't going to work for me. But that was it. There would be 3 or 4 different ways of doing a step, sometimes 2. If 2 were there, it was still confusing for me. So we wanted to keep it simple. And so what we did, we used the guidelines, the 12 traditions, where what the decision that we made was that you could speak about how you did the step out of the book if you'd done the step out of the book. But if you'd found another way, that was fine, except we would just like to listen to you today. If you have any questions about how we did it out of the book, please come see us after the meeting. So we went by the guidelines where it says, each group is autonomous, and that was our thing. We took a group conscience, and everyone agreed it was a good idea. And plus, a precedent had been set because, and it's still going today, I believe, like if you're on a group commitment, if you can't speak unless you have 90 days of sobriety, they haven't changed that anyways. So all we were doing is, if you haven't done the steps out of the book, we ask you to listen. Well, boy, oh boy, we unleashed a fucking snake pit.
What?
Yeah. They were hot after us. A little further along, I'll explain. And my friend George was there, and Bobby. And God, Greg, you weren't there, I don't think. But because we had this thing within our group, by this time there's six of us, and we're meeting in a little room up at the college, and then more people came, and so we had more. We still had about maybe six people altogether who had gone through the steps out of the book. And what we'd do, we'd sit around, there'd be Dennis and I, all right, we're both done the steps, then one guy, be a couple of newcomers, and someone who had done the step would do it, then a couple of new guys, then a couple of more. So we spread it around. And we didn't intentionally set that. We thought it was a good idea because you would hear how I did it, then two guys would be listening, then you would hear how Bill did it, two guys, and that type of thing. And it just worked out. And this one fella came in. He came in with a couple of his friends. He had been sober, I think, about 15, 16 years at the time. And he was going to tell us that, he's got a right to speak. And we tried to explain to him in a nice way that group conscience says as long as we're not hurting anybody, we can do things the way we want. Well, and so eventually he got there. He got a little heated at first, but he decided, he picked up, him and his buddies moved on, and we went on from there. But every now and then, someone would come in. I can remember the time. It's other people. This fella got all upset. He was sober about a year or two, and he couldn't speak. And we tried explaining to him that, this is the group conscience who we do it. That's when he called us a bunch of AA Nazis. That was the first time I heard that. And Greg remembers, and we had one of the members of our group, he was a commercial artist, and so what he did is he took the circle and the AA symbol and the triangle, and he put two lightning bolts through it, and that's the German Nazis, so that was it. So my friend Huey, who had been drunk and dope sick one morning, had dumped his motorcycle and then came in and got the message. Anyways, he was sober with us, and he was getting his motorcycle fixed down at the Holly store, and they had to get it repainted on the gas tanks. Instead of putting the Holly logo on it, he had him put the new one that we had come up with the circle and the triangle and the lightning bolt, and they painted that on. And my buddy Greg right here, I remember you were getting a new seat on your bike, on your Holly, and you had them embroider that same thing on the seat. Is that correct? Is my memory correct?
Close.
So they were a little heated, and it showed itself in several ways. One of them was we were never asked to come to a meeting to speak. Never. And I think, thinking about it, several reasons. One, I think we were the AA Nazis, and we were going against, tradition, so to speak, what had been established down here. And they didn't like us because, for a number of reasons, these things came to me today, and I'd been thinking about talking with Greg and Chris and stuff, is that we weren't sober that long. And all of a sudden, we're coming up, and we're changing the rules of the game. And that was one of the things. And I think just the idea that we could come in and tell them they couldn't do something, they couldn't speak, unless they did what we suggested they do, then they're more than welcome. Well, After about, I think it was about 5 or 6 years, George, that get-together happened up in Framingham. We had some people. We had a big book, the first one that I know of. By this time, the group had been going about 6 years, maybe more. We had enough to have our own big book convention. And it was up on Route 9 up in Framingham, I believe, at a good-sized motel up there that had a big function room. We had plenty of room. And happened on a Friday and Saturday and wrapped up Saturday afternoon, I believe. And so Mr. Burns, where is Miss Bobby's here? There he is, right in front of me. He was there. And I think you bought the pizza. We had a big layout of pizza there and in the rooms and stuff. And this fella come up, introduced himself, and he said that he was coming from World Service in New York City to listen to our group, because there had been complaints made, I imagine, from the Cape up to Boston. And Boston called New York and explained to him, you know, that we were calling ourselves an AA group, and we had actually advertised at some that get together. It was common knowledge. I think a poster maybe made or something. I saw something along the way along that line. But New York sends this fella down. He came in, and we were in your room, I think, where all the pizzas were and stuff. People along the line had pointed in mind, oh, we don't know, but you go talk to those guys in that room. So he comes in, and a nice guy. And I wasn't a jerk at all about it, real pleasant. He identified himself. He told us where he was from and why he was here. And what he would like to do is just listen in and see if it was accurate what people had been reporting, that we were not following AA traditions and we shouldn't be calling ourselves an AA group. So I think that evening we would have speakers, and then they had a dinner at the next day at noontime or something, and then we had more speakers. Well, the fella came up before we sat down, and he came up and he shared with us that he did not see anything wrong with what we were doing, and he encouraged us to keep going the way we were doing it. And so we listened to him, as you can see. And that was, it's just, I think people came down from Fall River. In fact, I saw, I was at a meeting Tuesday night with Mike in the back up in Fairhaven, where there was a fellow I haven't seen in 30-odd years, but there was a bunch of folks would come down from Fall River, New Bedford, and my buddy Tom, again, I hadn't been, good 30 years since I'd seen him. And I go walking in the room Tuesday night, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him. He says, "Don?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Tom." It just grew like you can see today. And I think it was so important, like people make... They make a lot to do about not having people speak because they haven't gone through the steps. I think that comes down. I think if people know why we're not asking them, why we're asking them to listen, it takes a lot of the sting out. We're not jerks. We're not better than anybody. We just wanted to have people be able to avoid what we had gone through, which translates into... We don't want you to walk out of a 12-step meeting more confused than when you walked into it, that type of thing. And people just came down and went back and started meetings where they lived. And there's a great story. What's the name? Oh, God, it's fading out on me. Oh, Laurel S. She came down. She was, and She approached me and said that she and Janie King would like to sit in on our meeting. This is when we're up at the college. And if they could just listen and see how we did it, how we ran the meeting, what we had done, because they wanted to start their own women's meeting using the big book. And Laurel had gone through the steps out of the book. And in fact, I helped her. On the fear part, no. We didn't get to the sex part of the fourth, but I got to show her how to write her thing. And then she went on from there, because there were no women. There were no women at all that had gone through the steps out of the book. But Laurel got together and started it. And it's, I think that the women's group is still going well on Thursday nights. I hear they're on Zoom. But Laurel was the one that really kept that meeting going. Kept it going for up until, still going strong now. But she went through marriage, raised two kids, worked, everything else, and was still able to hang in there and kept that women's group to what it is today. And before I turn this over to Dennis, you can share about your Boston experience.
Sure.
And it's, I think I get so many, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I did this on purpose. I wrote myself a little cheat sheet, right? Hey, I'm 81. I forget shit, okay? Gonna be 82 in July, day at a time. All right, got it. The reason for having the steps by the book. Oh, yeah, I think, like I said, we were, I think one of the reasons we were unwelcome is because we talked about drugs when we spoke. And that was not acceptable. Laura with a woman's group. And talked about New York coming down, very little to death. Gentlemen, I don't, that's basically how we got here tonight, in the start of it. What I like to do, Dennis wants to speak, and we talk. We got time when this is over. If you have people have any questions, I know too, Dennis and I or anyone else will be answer them for you. And now that's it for me.
I'm sorry.
Well, guys. Ladies, and we've got some ladies on Zoom tonight, Don. Thank you very much. Yeah, there's a lot of history. I've asked a lot of questions from a lot of members of this group, Greg being one of them. I would like to thank the guys who helped set up. There's guys that donated tonight for this meeting, and certainly isn't about... It's kind of like our anniversary. This is only the second time Don has done this in this hall. And, yeah, if it wasn't for guys that certainly came before me, Don obviously is my sponsor now, and Greg that's here, my brother John, I certainly wouldn't be in this room if it wasn't for Don sponsoring or my brother John. And, you know, I remember the days of the Hyannis Men's Big Book group, and eventually the group left from, you can jump in anytime.
No, go
you
right
know,
ahead.
It left from Four C's, then it went to the Federated Church, and to say that that meeting wasn't colorful would be an understatement. Yeah, and I walked into that room. As you were talking, I think of all the guys that were at that meeting that had a huge impact on me. You know, when I pulled up to my first... meeting there was a whole bunch of Harleys, yeah. And I showed up on a 10-speed, and they accepted me. I mean, having John as my brother, certainly, that probably helped a lot, we'll say that. And but I look at Greg that's sitting right in front of me. I think of Big Jerry. I think about Russell Bowes. I think of Kevin Kelleher, Terry. You know, a lot of these guys have passed on, and they had a huge impact you know, in my life, and, you know, a lot of these guys. And then that meeting moved from there to the Federated Church, and, yeah, it changed my life, that's for sure. I just think of all the men that really impacted me, and I bent Greg's ear for quite a while about different things. A lot of stuff I didn't know. I didn't know that this is Big Book Step Study, and that when you guys formed this group, it was a big book group, and then you wanted to turn it into a step study. So that was a whole nother business meeting that I was doing my thing. I wasn't in the rooms, but there's a lot of stuff that I wasn't aware of, and that certainly was one of them. And a small piece of history that I remember being at a business meeting when I was very new, that Dale, you know, I say his name and get emotional every time, but he's the one that said, you know, a moment of silence would be 2 or 3 seconds. And Dale said, yeah, I think we should have a 2-minute moment of silence. And that's where that came from. And that was down in the basement of the Hyannis Federated Church. And I think about, you know, being at that meeting, riding my bike there, making coffee, and then all the hogs would roll in. And it was an unbelievable time in my life. I was 20 years old, and Dale would go to Florida, and Big Jerry was my temporary sponsor at the time. And we played ice hockey. We rented the ice one time. We rented a gym. We played basketball. But most of all, these guys carried a message that I was amazed by. That meeting was unreal. I learned so much, and so much from the guys in that group, especially some of the guys that are sitting right here. I think Bobby and I wrote our 4 steps pretty much at the same time. You never forget who you wrote your 4-step with. That's one thing that I remember. And, you know, from that, I remember they started a meeting in Plymouth. Lucky was instrumental in that. I believe it was Plymouth. There was a meeting started there. And then Braintree, there was a meeting started there. And I was 22. And that's when I approached the guys at a business meeting. I said, well, look at, there was my girlfriend at the time and my sister, and they were both writing their 4 steps. And I said, why would you guys support a meeting in Boston? And they, you know, I approached the women's group actually too. And everybody agreed, like, who doesn't want to go to Boston on a Friday night? I mean, I couldn't get enough of it. Of course, you know, having a girlfriend in Boston certainly didn't hurt that trip to Boston, but being 100% honest. But so it's funny, when we started the meeting, we started in a similar, not a real small hall, but I think it was called the Labouré Center. And, you know, it wasn't this big, probably half the size, and we outgrew that room right away. And then we had to go to this West Broadway, across from the establishment, Triple O's, if you've ever heard of that. Yeah, there's the Irish boys in the back. Yeah. And I got some advice on that when I got to Boston. It was a Friday night, and it was the largest big book meeting that I ever been to. It blew up right away. We had, everybody was welcome, and it took off. It was amazing. And the head count one night that I got was 260 wow. some odd people at that meeting. And if you were going to speak, you had to speak up. But before that, as I look at George, I remember before that, George started a meeting at his restaurant. And this is something that a lot of guys spoke of here is, so when it was on a Saturday morning, I believe, and if you got to speak at George's restaurant, it wasn't the honor of speaking, you got a free bucket of chicken. I mean, that was
so good.
And you, yeah, and you wanted to go with whoever was speaking, obviously. And it started in his restaurant. And if you've been to the Norton meeting on Saturday, it's over 100 people there. Well, I will say this meeting's well run. I'd say that meeting is like it's a machine. Everyone has a job. It's an excellent meeting. Anyways, So this, it was like, I guess it was Frankie talks about it. It was in the air back in like 1980s, I'd say. And and that meeting in Boston took off. And then there might have been, there was another group, the Charlestown Men's Group started, which is now Malden, I believe, on a Friday night. And I was just up there with Curran in the back. He spoke there and I spoke. You know, you got to have a sense of humor. So I was asked to speak the following week. And one of the members, I introduced myself on the stop. And he said, I said, Dennis, I'm an alcoholic. I was a member of Hyannis. I'm a member of West Barnstable, my home group. I spoke. It came around to him and he gave me some shit. He said, I'm going to let you know, this is the best meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I've heard of your groups, but this is the best one. And I'm going to swear. And I interrupted him. I said, on a fucking Friday night it is, but not any other night of the week. So, you know, it was all in good fun. It was funny anyways. But we're not saints, so they say. So this message to me is just... It saved my life. I think about all the people that all these lives, you know, some of the members that are not here, like I mentioned earlier, like these guys were giants. These guys, I looked up to every single one of them. I had a great relationship with Dale. When Dale passed, Donnie became my sponsor. And it's just the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me. And to see, you know, I'm grateful for this meeting. I love all the meetings I've ever been to, but to me, if I were to describe this meeting right here, this is a meeting of peace. Not one time has anybody raised their voice here. Not yet. We don't want to break the record, guys, but, you know, lives have changed in this room just like every other AA meeting. I don't think we're any better. I don't think we're any worse. But I will tell you, if it wasn't for the guys that came before me, I certainly wouldn't be sitting here. And that actually happened after my OUI head-on collision. Donnie asked John, what's Dennis doing? And he said, he's on the couch, he's passing blood, he's this, that, and the other thing. And Don said the words that come out of this guy, he said, why don't you see if he wants to have him go to a meeting before he starts feeling a little better? So, you know, you give an alky a couple days, then it's not his fault, it's everybody else's fault. So, you know, that's my experience, and I've been grateful to have these. I can't say it enough, the men and women that came before me, which one of our group members always says that, Mike K, I would not be here if it wasn't for guys like Greg, my brother John, Donnie, and all the legion of men that have been, you know, have listened, you know, to my 10 steps. And they trust me, I trust them. That's what we have in this room. I'm very blessed to have met the men and a lot of women also that carry an unbelievable message in this room. You know, that's enough for me, but I mean, I was thinking of Greg and John, you guys were here, and if I'm missing anybody, if you guys want to say anything, you're welcome to. It's up to you. You don't want to. I know Chris is online if he would like to jump in, but... That's my two cents. So,
I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Just a couple of quick stories, and then a topic I definitely want to get to. When I came in here. I had gone to the men's big book meeting at the college with one of my brothers. And I left there. I was probably a week sober because I had heard all this talk about this meeting and I wanted to go to it. People were telling me not to go and all that other crap. And so I went and I sat down. I knew probably one or two guys. I knew Dale because I had hung out with Dale's sister. I used to drink with her a lot. And so I knew Dale, and I think I was introduced to Donnie by Dale the next Saturday night. And I left there, and I said, I'm never going back to that part. And the next Saturday night, I was at a meeting in South Yarmouth, and Dale and Donnie were sitting behind me. And at the end of the meeting, I turned around and I asked Tony to be my sponsor because I knew I needed to get a sponsor, you know. Donegate became my sponsor. We began to talk. It was in early January. Sometime in the spring, we were up at the Harley dealer. I was buying a brand new Softail, 1985, and I was walking around the showroom, and I was like, "Don, this is the bike I want." And he goes, "Great." I go, "I just got to figure out what color to get." And he goes, "John, you can get any shade of black you want." So that was one of the stories. And then I was living, I had my own home. I had a business. Dennis was living with me. He was performing for me. And I'll tell you the story as I remember it. He got in a car accident. It was a Sunday night. The next morning, I went to work, and I was talking to Don on the phone afterwards, after I got out of work, and Don, he said, "How's Dennis doing?" And I go, "Well, he's not so good, you know, he's laying down." He goes, "Can he walk?" And I go, "Yeah, he can walk." And Don, he goes, "Well, get him to a fucking meeting before he starts feeling better." But for me, that was two funny stories, but the thing that I got when I came here was, I mean, when I came into the meeting, the guys were downstairs. There was maybe 10 or 15 guys. But it was like a brotherhood, you know. And I was writing my four-step. Jerry was writing his. Lucky was writing his four-step. There was a couple other guys that I remember being very friendly and liking Kevin Kay and some of those guys. We used to play basketball together and stuff like that. In fact, you know, I played hockey all my life. I was a goalie, and I got two teeth knocked out playing basketball. So, but the camaraderie in this room, and, you know, it's a brotherhood, you know, it really is. You know, you see a guy outside of this room. And let me say this, if you're new here, if you've only been here a couple times, don't walk out of this room without getting a sponsor and getting involved, because it'll save your friggin' life. My life today, you know, 40-something years later, is, you know, I can't describe it to you. I can't describe it because my life is peaceful. You know, my house is quiet. I'm married. I have two children, I don't like to call them kids, they're not goats. They're successful, you know, and I have a peaceful home, you know. I'm financially secure, I'm emotionally secure, and I have all that stuff is because of two things: God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as it laid out in that book, you know. And when I got sober, the first thing Don taught me was how to stay away from a drink or a drug a day at a time. And for the first 90 days, that was the most important thing I could do. The other thing was, I wasn't allowed to say anything. Shut your mouth, you got nothing to say. Listen. And that was great advice. So that camaraderie, that brotherhood, you know, will save your life someday, you know. And that goes on today. And I believe, my personal opinion is, whatever big book meeting you belong to, whatever state that big book meeting is, whatever group of men you're around, that's the best meeting around for you for that night. That's how I feel. And that's just what this kind of meeting does for people. For me, it's a men. It does for men, you know. So that's it for me. Thanks.
Greg, do you want to say anything?
You know, I'm really grateful to be here and to show support to the group, to Don, to Dennis, and, you know, my friends who have stuck with me. And that's all. I'm just excited to listen.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Don had asked, does anybody have any questions? Like, He's answering. I'm listening.
You may.
I forgot to introduce Don tonight when I wanted to say, okay, this is Don, and you can't listen tonight. Because Don listens all the time. He always passes, but not tonight. So I didn't know if anybody, you know, we were talking about it. Does anybody have, oh, there's a hand in the back. Mike.
Mike Don Holler.
Mike.
Is it true that the motto of this group when it first started was it's always better to give a resentment than to get a resentment?
No.
I guess that's a no, Mike.
That's a no.
Anybody else? Wow. Adam's got one.
About what year did the women's group start, and does Don have any thoughts about the co-ed versus men's and women's meetings? I don't know. Just coming out there.
I'm not sure when it started.
I know who started it. It was Huey and Donna started the first co-ed one.
Oh, the co-ed one.
The co-ed one.
Oh, no. No, I'll tell you. I like to go to meetings where women are because it's like just to hear their side and realize that, you know, they're just like we are. There's the pain, the fear, the disappointments, all that there. But no, I like going to meetings where I can hear a woman who's gone through the steps and wants to share their experience with it. Yeah, no, I think, like I say, this men's group started because Chris didn't want women coming taking over the meeting, his girlfriend. But we just went for it. I don't think I had even heard of a men's only meeting at that time. But again, you're going back 46 years this thing's been going. So times have changed. And the reason why they didn't want us speaking at regular meetings, I think one of the big things was because we'd be sharing about doing drugs other than alcohol along with it, that type of thing. And they were really adamant about there's another place for people that do drugs and it's not here, that type of thing. And it wasn't because they were jerks or just mean-spirited. My belief is it came down, they didn't know any better. Because drugs were coming on the scene, where before it wasn't like it was when these guys, I'm talking, my sponsor was a World War II vet, Navy veteran, and he was truly ahead of his time. And those of you who have heard this story, but when I asked him to be my sponsor, they called him Mr. Clean, Big Pat was it, because he was a big guy. He built like back there, big fellow there. And he used to shave his head. No one was shaving their head except Pat at that time in the commercial, Mr. Clean. But anyways, I'd asked him to be my sponsor, and I had hair down my back in my hippie days. It was, and I'd been coming off a lot of PCP. Might say I was a mess. But anyways, I asked him to be my sponsor, and he's looking, he's a big guy, and he's looking down at me, and he's sharing with me how he stays away. He says, the way I stay away from that first drink is I get out of bed, the first thing in the morning, I get on my knees, and I ask my higher power to keep me away from a drink for the day. And tonight, the last thing I do is I'll get back in the, before I get into bed, is I'll thank this higher power for a day of sobriety. And he's looking at me, and he says, you know, you may want to try that. Tomorrow morning, when you wake up, first thing when you get out of bed, ask your higher power to keep you away from one drink. And then he looks at me, one drink for the day, and that other shit you're doing. And that man was way ahead of his time. really, because people are his coming out of World War II, that type of thing. But he, and he had been a street drunk in Boston, wino in Boston when he got sober in 52, that type of thing. But he had the wisdom to see that something was going on, because I wasn't the only one that was doing a lot of PCP. They're going around there. And but he had the wisdom to know that the change was taking place in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was just a matter of people seeing that, yeah, these guys that they're smoking pot, they're doing this. I remember Vinny English. You remember Vinny, yes, right? He was a street addict. And he said, I remember the first time I heard him, he says, hey, it's all the same. It all goes to the same place. It all goes to your head, whether you're smoking it, chewing it, or shooting it. And that was his feeling. And I said, yeah, that makes sense. We're all using it for the same reason. But, yeah. So I think gradually as time changed, people realized that people coming in, they're not coming, they were not just boozers like we are. There was drugs around, but they weren't coming on like it was when I got sober in the 70s and going on like that. It was coming on. So, and again, the people that were telling us, we don't do drugs here, we don't talk about it, it's just they didn't know any better. They were just ignorant about the life had been changing around them, that type of thing. That's my take on it. That's it.
Bill, do you want to ask anybody online if they
sure,
got a question?
Yeah, anybody on Zoom, you can go ahead and unmute.
Yeah, Don, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, geez.
All right, so you're not supposed to have favorite pigeons, but I have a very important question. Who's your favorite parrot? Just kidding.
You know the answer to that anyway.
This is Dan. I just want to say thank you, brother. You helped change my life. Helping me with knowing the steps out of the book. And it's good to be back in the wind. I can't wait to see you in person.
Oh, yeah. I remember playing what we used to do, right? Well, we're in Hyannis, the meeting would wrap up at 9. We'd go like a bugger, put all the chairs away, boom, 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 jump in our cars, drive down to the Tony Kent Ice Arena in Dennis, and we'd be on the ice at 10 o'clock.
There wasn't a lot of principles being practiced on the ice.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story. Dale, our buddy Dale, right? He was in the corner, messing around. Some of these guys could play some hockey, really. They knew what they were doing. Danny was one of them. And Dale could skate, too. He'd done some semi-pro hockey. And he's poking around there. And this other fella, Marco, a big strapping kid, athletic, played a lot of hockey. He's giving Dale, boom, 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 pushing him a little bit, right? And Dale looks over his shoulder, sees it's Mark, and gives him a butt end in the chest. We had no pads on, caught him in the chest, and then Mark's catching his breath. Dale looks and scoots over and gets on his bench, and Mark went and got on his bench. Every time Dale would get on the ice, Mark would jump over the boards and go up, try to catch him. You know, it was quite a time. Sometimes it'd be 12 o'clock at night, we'd be getting out of there, because the guy who was running the place, right, he knew we were the last ones for the night, and he'd say, hey, can I skate with you guys? Yeah, okay. So we'd go lock the place up, jump on the ice with us, and 12 o'clock at night, we'd be rolling out of there, that type of thing.
Donnie.
Yeah.
Donnie, just a real quick story along with you talking about that. A kid I sponsored was playing one night, and he was on the other team, and I said, come on, give me the puck, Mark. And he passed it back to me, and I scored. And they don't forgive me for that.
I have one.
Larry Brown,
oh,
question.
Go ahead. Larry.
Go ahead. Okay, so in the beginning, when you started off with step one, step two, three, how did you break it down? With the readings and reading the third step prayer, getting a dictionary, when you come with the fourth step, a five-step subject notebook, how did you guys get together and break all that down into a format, how we do it?
I shared with the people that I sponsored what I did, and then they in turn would pass it along. And also, again, where no one had shared anything with us, it was a learning experience, so that we realized what worked and what didn't. As we went along, there were some changes here. Let's read this. Let's do that. That type of thing.
Okay.
We never... we never really sat down and said, this is how we should do this, this is how we should do that. What we do, someone would explain, say, I think we should do this, do that, and it's been working. Okay, let's do that, that type of thing as far as... But we sat down, I think Chris had a lot to do with it too. I don't know if you're still there, but...
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, picking different chapters to read. We knew the ones that we felt had been important to us when we'd be sharing one-to-one with people. We'd have them read, like, the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, that type of thing.
I think the best thing was getting a dictionary, because some of those words I did not understand. So when my sponsor said, get an Oxford dictionary,
yeah.
Was one of the best things for me. And of course, reading the third step for each time. With my sponsor was amazing. So this process has been unbelievable. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
You guys have saved my life and a bunch of people's lives.
Yeah, God's been very good to us.
Yes, he
has. Because I look around, I heard, where the hell, oh. They asked me to speak to a group, was in Russia. And one of the things that they talk about in their preamble is they say, we go through the steps out of the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous, following the Hyannis method. And I've heard it. And then last week, a couple of weeks ago, a fella, you know Phil, rides a motorcycle? Yeah. He was talking with someone over here who had been talking to someone down in Caracas. This all happened like 3 weeks ago. And the guy who's down in Caracas was sharing that he had just left a co-ed Big Book meeting, and when they read in their preamble, they say, we follow the Hyannis method of going through. And for me, again, my point of reference, and I'm sure some of the fellows that have been around here, that I can close my eyes and still see, like, the six of us sitting in a little room, little teacher's room up there at the college. And when Chris and I, we got together to come up with it, again, there was like all together six people. Chris went out and bought a Mr. Coffee. That's all we needed. And I tell you, one of the things when people we noticed, after going through these steps, things got better in our life. We had a few more bucks in our pocket. Chris was starting a business, and but what we did is we ponied up a few bucks a piece, and we bought extra Big Books, so that if anyone needed a Big Book, walk out with it. You don't need to pay. No, take the book and, you know, use it, that type of thing. That was one of the things that we started, and it's really... It's nice for me when I go to other Big Book meetings and to see that your group up there in Norton, yeah, they've got a whole stack of brand new Big Books, and one of the fellas there will announce it, hey, if you need a Big Book, come get it, they're free, take it with you, that type of thing. That's something that we, yeah, good to see it sticking, and it's...
Yeah, one last thing. I'm in Venice, Florida right now, and our Big Book Step study follows the Hyannis. So that is so cool, and it's all God. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all God. You know, so pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's like people will... people will thank me and Chris and others for starting this. And I know that when we started this group, Chris and I can still see us over there at his little place over there, Master's Mills or whatever. And the last thing, we just wanted a meeting where we could go and go through the steps out of the big book. That's all we wanted to do. And all of a sudden, the way things have gone on, for me, it's really clear. I can just look out and see you folks. You know, it's not the six people that started. It was six people that we had. This is one meeting, and they're going over. And to me, it's just proof positive that the God in this world who was calling the shots picked Chris and myself and a couple of others to get this thing going. It wasn't anything that we set out to do. It's just crystal clear. All we wanted was a place where we could go through the steps out of the big book. And God said, okay, good. You guys got it. Now go to town because...
Well, thank you for your obedience.
Yeah, thank you. It certainly benefited me, I'll tell you that. It's been a life truly. I used to be at meetings and I'd hear people say, oh, they've got a life second to none. And I thought, well, gee, that's cute, you know. Well, now I'm here to tell you folks, I got a life second to none. And I have for the last 40-odd years. Yeah. When I started getting involved, and I got involved with these steps because I truly didn't want to live the way I was living any longer. And it only would have been a period of time before I would have picked up a drink and then I would have killed myself. I know that.
Don, I think it's, I don't know if you want to mention it, but it's a story that always struck me was your... how it evolved into 10 and especially 11 later on.
Oh, yeah, 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 I'll tell you. When we were going, it was a learning phase. My buddy Chris and I were talking about it today. And I speak from my own experience. We'd be really good through up through 8 and 9. Kind of hold your hand right through the whole thing. And then 6 and 7, that will be 6 and 7, be reading and yeah, go for it. And 8 and 9 would help you with the decision making, making your amends. And 10 and 11, I can speak from my own perspective that I never really got involved with what they were sharing, what to do. And, you know, when 10th step, get agitated and doubtful, stop, ask for the right thought or action. 11th step, if you don't know which course to take, stop, ask for an intuitive thought, inspiration, or decision. For me, those have been life-changing. Because in life, we're always going to have to make decisions. We're always going to... Like, I was a court officer for a while. Jay remembers. Yeah. And so it was like, I would sometimes see things that I would get a little agitated and doubtful with, right? I know. This was in the summertime, and this kid, he was a Hispanic kid, he come in, big guy, and a lot of ink on his arms. He come in with his buddy and his girlfriend. And he's, you know, they're going in to see the judge. He's got a little macho thing going on. And so I see him. I got about 30 seconds before he's walking in the door. I see him coming up the driveway. So I go to the 10th step there. You know, I say, I'm starting to get agitated. I say, God, I'm starting to get a little agitated here. Because, you know, I know how he's going to come on like gangbusters, and I don't want to feed into it, da-da-da. Give me the right thought or action. So the guy walks in, like, 20 seconds after I finish my little prayer, and he's standing in front of me, you know, looking around. And I noticed that the tattoos on his arms were really well done. And not that I'm an aficionado. I got one. I got a paratrooper I've had for 60 years. Okinawan guy put it on. But I'm looking at it, and I say, wow, you've got some really nice work here. And honest to God, his whole demeanor changed. He sat down. And where that came from, I didn't know. I didn't know what his tattoos looked like when he's 20 feet away. But when he's 2 feet away from me, I'm looking at him. And I said, wow, you've got some really nice work here. And he's telling me he got it up in Springfield and this and that. And we're talking, and he went on and he said, oh, my girlfriend wants to use the bathroom, can she? I said, oh, yeah, and I sort of directed him where to go. And his buddy who was with him, he dropped. He was smiling and going on. And that's where I learned that from the big book. I got agitated. Instead of putting on, you know, this macho bullshit stuff, right? I just said, okay, God, where are we going to go with this? I didn't call for my friend Big Mike, who played for the Patriots. Things got a little, he was a defensive end for the Patriots, and he used to work with us. So if things got a little shaky, I'd say, can I have a court officer come through the lobby here? And Mike would respond, and that was, he just walked through. People would take a second look, and no, I don't think so, not today.
Did you ask for help for that or no?
I didn't have to know when that was on my mind. Well, I don't like it because then you're taking him away from what he's doing. But that type of thing. But, you know, that was it. Yes.
Donnie, do you ever think any of us guys will be able to sponsor some women?
I have. This was before there were women in. And again, the only thing I did was with Laurel. I showed her how to write a fourth up, and, you know, with write down the amends, spaceship. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Come on up.
When I first met Donnie, which is about four. Maybe almost 40 years ago or so, I thought this man is the quietest man, the most self-contained, calm, and serene person I've probably ever met. So I said, this guy is so self-contained, he wouldn't show any emotion in a fucking plane crash. So then when he wanted to get a job with the
courts,
well, I knew some people, so I was able to get that through. But I needed his resume. So upon the resume was, he had a nice resume and so forth, but there was also this thing that I had, because I had said to myself, this guy wouldn't show any emotion in a fucking plane crash. So I looked up that resume, and it says, 4 citations in Vietnam as a paratrooper. So I was so ashamed that I even thought that. But you never know. You never know what's going on in a quiet man. So a quiet man can have a lot of power. So anyway.
Thank you all.
We all adore you.
God's been very good to us in this year. Very good, gentlemen. Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody else? There it is. Anything else? Well, there's no good AA after 9 o'clock, so that's it. Want to do the Lord's Prayer, please?
Drop and change on the floor and
right.
Car keys and stuff, yeah.
Which?
Oh, mercy.
to sponsor some women.
If one other thing, if you guys could think or keep, we got everybody circled up for us. Yeah, we're gonna have it.
We'll get that job.
Yes, correct. Couple last things. We're going to have a business meeting quickly to get a new chairperson. I would like to obviously thank Don and everybody who helped, David, making the coffee, buying all the food, setting everything up, everyone that made this happen tonight. It meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to a lot of people. So grateful for that. Most importantly, if you could think about Bernie, and if you could give him a call, anybody that knows him, hey, his number, he's not doing too well, give him a shout. I got the word actually tonight. That would really be helpful. I think we covered everybody, and thanks for everybody's effort tonight.
Thank you.
And,
Dennis.
Yeah? What's that? If you want to throw a few bucks in here, feel free. If not, don't worry about it. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. And we'll end with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory forever.
Amen.
Amen.
Good stuff.